Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 469, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I am your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Aaron Michael from Techie Tutors. Welcome to the show, Aaron. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well, as always. How are you?
I am doing excellent. Before the show, we were talking about weather and, you know, Aaron's in California, I'm in Michigan, and he was kind of asking me if I was a little cool. And the reality is, sitting in my office surrounded by computers in this interim season where it's like 68 degrees outside, I've got my window wide open and I'm sweating profusely. So, no, it's kind of hot in here. So, Aaron, I mean, it's been a while since you've been on the show, and we always love the different things you share. So what types of things have been going on in your business?
Well, I mean, last time I was on this show, as opposed to the PodNuts Live, was like a couple of years ago, really, like when I first transitioned into doing this full time. And now things are way more stable than they were in the beginning. I'm not running around so much. I'm not spending as much on advertising. And I've kind of got a little bit more of a steady flow of work every single month. So things are a little bit more comfortable now, which is awesome.
Nice.
So I think that's probably the biggest difference since I was on this show. As far as anything new and exciting, I don't know. Lately, it's been a mixed bag of all kinds of different things. I feel like I've been able to offer a whole array of diverse services and do pretty well as far as keeping work coming in by doing that. So by not finding a niche, like most people, I think that works well for a lot of people, is find one thing that you really like to do. And I've experimented with that a little bit too, but the ability to do all kinds of different things, I think, is probably what's made things more comfortable for me now.
That makes a lot of sense though, Aaron, because a lot of times we tend to be, I should say, a jack of all trades. And everybody will say a jack of all trades, master of none, right? But the reality is, the basis of this business is to troubleshoot. You're there to troubleshoot a problem and therefore come up with a solution and something to fix that problem. So it's in our nature. And as long as you enjoy troubleshooting a lot of different things, it will make your job not boring. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and then in addition to like repair work, which I'll do, like you said, the troubleshooting, and you go out and maybe it's, I don't know, a wireless network today. Maybe it's some kind of printer issue the next day. Whatever it might happen to be in terms of troubleshooting and repair, that's fun for what it is. But then installation, I've found a lot of work doing that type of thing, whether it be with, Internet of Things. Someone gets a home doorbell/video camera that networks and tells them on their phone when they, and it's a little bit overwhelming for them. Different kinds of thermostats. I've worked with a couple different kind of thermostats that are internet ready, and people get them and they're not really sure how to integrate that into, you know, the rest of their technology life. So I've been doing a lot of that, security cameras in homes as well. So kind of a variety of things, not just the fixing of a computer or building of a website or something really specific to what I think a lot of us do, but kind of outside of that range a little bit. I mean, I had a background in audio video installation, so I know a little bit about all that. Kind of offering that to the customer base that I have right now has been pretty successful for me.
And I think that's great, because guess what? There are people out there that need those things installed and they don't really know exactly, even though there's instructions, and if you follow the instructions, it doesn't seem that hard, but to them, I would just rather pay somebody to come in and hook this up properly for me and just have it work versus me taking X amount of hours to try to sit here and figure it out myself.
Yeah. Or in the case of the cameras, I mean, running wires, not everybody gets the Wi-Fi cameras. So some skill set, you know, that, that maybe we might possess that they don't, and it works out pretty well to be able to offer that in addition to the other types of services.
And like you said, it keeps you busy, right?
Well, that's my whole point, is like, it's kept me working, where in the beginning, like 2 years ago when we talked, like that was my big rock to deal with, is how to get the phone ringing, how to get the emails coming in, how to get that influx of business that you need to stay afloat. And at the point in time, you know, then and up until, I don't know, I want to say maybe a few months before the summer, it was just a lot of hustling, you know, a lot of getting out there and a lot of advertising and marketing and spending time online and trying to just network and all that legwork that, you know, eventually turns into more organic, you know, business coming in, people calling saying, hey, my buddy has, you know, whatever the car shop that you work for that you did their network. He told me over lunch that you helped him out and I need help with this, the referral business, you know, or someone whose neighbor got a neighbor recently, some super nice neighborhood that I've been working with these people for a long time. They just happened to be hanging out with their neighbor and neighbor happened and needed something. And, you know, they mentioned it. Neighbor also has, you know, pretty sweet pad and huge place and needs a network set up. So, you know, it's going to be a couple few hours worth of work, and who knows what that turns into over time. You know, I mean, so that has, how do I say, like, I've been reaping what I've sown. So spent a year or so, year and a half, working super hard, just running around like crazy, trying to get as much business as I could. And now, like I mentioned before, I haven't had to do that as much, and it's been really nice.
Now, what types of things were you using for advertising that were either working or not working for you during that out year and a half period?
That's a good question. I mean, because like we talked about before, I tried all kinds of different things. And some of them, well, let's take, for example, I mean, I tried flyers, which was kind of successful, I guess. I mean, if you look at the numbers professional advertising people will talk about, if you get like 2% back, they're like, oh, wow, that's great, 2%. And for a normal guy like me, I'm like, 2%, that's garbage, you know? Like,
right.
If I was playing a game or taking a test and I got 2%, like that would be embarrassing. I would redo that round. But those are, I guess, good numbers. So I guess I got pretty decent numbers from the flyers, advertising, mailers, whatever you want to call that, the direct door service from USPS.
Okay.
Which you're probably familiar with. It's a pretty sweet deal. And I think for other people, other industries, that might work out a little bit better for them. But anyway, I wasn't super happy with the return in terms of ROI. So I kind of didn't do that more. The other thing about my results compared to reality is that most people will do these things over and over and over again so they can get a better sample size of data to determine whether it was effective or not. A lot of these things I went out and tried once or twice and didn't work, so I didn't keep doing it. I had some signs made, which we talked about before. Having the person hold the sign for me, like a sign flipper kind of deal, was not as effective as.
Were they in a costume?
No, nothing like that. Like I was thinking, okay, I'll go to a busier part of town and have somebody, you know, for like $10-$12 an hour, hold the sign where I know people are going to be stopped. And we're talking about like hundreds of cars will be stopped, like right there throughout the point of, you know, whatever, noon to two or something like that. And I don't know if that, it was just more hassle for sure. Like having to deal with getting people and giving them the signs and picking them up after. So I didn't really get into that too much. It was just like, tried it a couple times and was like, I'm not really into this. This is just too much hassle. So I've got these two sweet signs now that have, which maybe I'll use at some point in time. Like if I go to, I don't know, volunteer at an event or something like that, or next time I do one of the, I don't want to call them seminars, but where you go, I work at like a lot of retirement homes, and time to time you'll go in there and I don't know, do like set up, organize like a free class on something or rather, and hoping afterwards people will have a few issues that you can kind of help them out with. And that has been pretty successful. Stopping by office plazas of people that I've already worked for, like I've already done work there. I'm like, hey, do you mind if I come by your break room and hand out a couple cards at your lunchtime? Or just drop a thing of donuts and some cards off with it. And they're like, no, that's cool, whatever. So spend like $5, get some donuts and just leave them there with the cards. And that has been, I've gotten a few calls. I mean, it's definitely paid for the donuts. So that wasn't any harm done.
And you're getting your name out there. I think a lot of people don't realize that, or maybe some do, that for our size businesses, when it's on the smaller side, some of these things like flyers or maybe being out there where you're another sign in the sea of information that's coming through is not going to be the best return on investment. And more of the touchy, I'll call it this touchy feely, where you're actually talking to people, seeing them, communicating, giving them good information. And then they can take that information and go, hey, I remember when so-and-so shared this with me and I've got a problem now. I'm going to call that person and see if they can help me out with the problem that I have.
Yeah, because that's the kind of thing that people tend to remember. I mean, the referrals have been the best so far. So finding a way to market to your customers, friends, and coworkers, and things like that, and using your customer to kind of get a foot in the door.
Right.
So they've got that to hang it on. It's like, oh, that's Bill's guy, or that's Debbie's guy, you know, that does her tech stuff. So then they also have a person that they can remember to go to when they invariably lose your card or whatever. So, well, let me go ask Debbie. She's got his number. So that's been pretty good. I mean, I've done AdWords and I paid Yelp for a little while. What else? I forget what it was, something or rather, where they put your stuff in the back of one of those circulars, I guess, that go out in some community, you know.
Sure.
These are people that own boats and they have a little thing that goes out to all the boat owners at their dock. And they're like, oh, we'll put this in the back. And it's only, you know, 100-something bucks. I'm like, whatever. Okay. Because I'd done some work over there on people installing audio systems before back in the day on boats down there. And that was a pretty good market for installing audio once you become the guy who does that, you know. And then everybody who meets each other down there, they're like, oh, I had so-and-so do the speakers in my system. So thinking maybe I'll do that for tech stuff. Because they're people that have a good amount of money and are usually willing to pay other people to do stuff they don't feel like doing, like you said before. And that I don't think I got a whole lot out of. Craigslist, honestly, it's ridiculous. And I know I mention this almost every time I talk to you, but I get a lot of legitimate clients off of there. And I'll be honest with that. I also get a couple calls here and there where it's people just price shopping, you know, and it's a little bit of a pain. I've gotten to the point where I'll let my voicemail catch the phone calls, and then I'll see my phone does a little, it turns it into text so I can read it. I don't actually have to go listen to the voicemail. And some of them I just don't call back because it's, you know, obviously kind of a sketchy scenario. Because it's Craigslist, it is what it is. But in addition to that, I get a lot of legitimate business customers from there who are just, in the beginning, looking at the best price, or that's their impulse. I feel like when I analyze the customer profile, it's like they're thinking, okay, I want to get a good deal, or where do you go? Anything that you type in online, you know, other than the Google AdWords results is going to be whatever, the big box retailers. And a lot of people aren't into that, or maybe they've tried them before, and for that reason, they don't ever want to go back there. So they look for a tech girl or a tech guy, somebody who they can have on their speed dial when they need somebody. And I don't, for whatever reason, a lot of them go on Craigslist. And then in the beginning, they maybe they're thinking about price and, oh, I want to get a good deal. Or maybe that's where the conversation starts. But once, I don't want to say as a salesperson, but just as a someone who knows what you're doing and knows what you're worth, and you can have that dialogue, you know, where you go back and forth and address their needs and then give them a quote. And a lot of them are just 100% on board with pretty much paying the full rate for things. So I don't find myself discounting anything, you know, because I got those customers for free.
That's good.
Yeah, it is. And time to time, again, you do get a couple people on there that are obviously looking for the cheapest price. And, you know, if I do end up having to talk to them or finding that out later after I've had the conversation, it's weird, but I think, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them or whatever, when to let them go. And I've gotten pretty good at that, saying, hey, you know what? I think this is probably a better fit for somebody else who maybe is looking to gain a little bit more experience in the industry and reduce their price for that reason, you know, in exchange for the experience. I've already got that. So, you know, it's going to be this rate, or maybe it'll be a better fit for somebody else.
And yeah, no, that's good.
It's not that hard to say.
I think there's a lot of probably there are people on Craigslist, and I think you hit the nail on the head, who are looking for a good deal. And because they're looking for a good deal, they will go on Craigslist all the time looking for different things. It's kind of like eBay used to be back in the day, where people would just hang out there looking for what they could bid on. Well, nowadays with everything where you can buy it now and you don't have to, you can just look for the best deal at the time. There's not a whole lot of bidding going on that I can see. And so I think even with the Craigslist, you're still going to find legitimate customers that are just, it's like anything else. Hey, newspapers are no good anymore for advertising either, yet people still read them, believe it or not. So
yeah, for sure.
There are definite things out there that can help others. I think it's perfectly fine. It's, especially if you found something that's working for you and you're not cutting your rates. So
I'm just trying to do a lot of different things. Right now, and for this, I mean, this last summer I ended up, and that's probably another thing I should mention too, is I don't want to call it really marketing because it's not, but getting to know and getting to work with larger firms, you know, firms that'll handle, like I pretty much do residential, no problem, but small, medium-sized business is sort of my bread and butter. I don't really go much higher than that because I'm a one-man shop and I'm not, and I have this conversation with customers a lot of the times. It's like, if you need something, it's Friday, it's 2:00 and you want someone out there at 2:15, that's not always going to happen. You know, this is secondary to, I do this so that I can have a life. So if I'm with my, you know, daughter at Disneyland and you call for an emergency or whatever, I may not pick up the phone. So I'm not that guy. If you need somebody for your big business and it's super important and you got millions of dollars riding on whatever, then you got to go to a bigger firm. You got to go to somebody who wants you as a customer and wants that kind of, you know, responsibility. And I work for some of them sometimes when they need somebody local on the ground. You know, there's this company out in Florida, another one in New York. And I, through doing different jobs for different people, ended up getting referrals and meeting these people. And they're like, hey, we'll put you on our list when we have work that we need done in San Diego. We need someone to go down. And I mean, most of the time, it's usually super easy stuff. But you'll go and represent their company and you'll get a call and you'll get, you know, pretty, maybe it's not 100% what you would charge customers directly. It's a little bit less expensive, but you don't have to find the work. They have customers, you know.
Right.
Oh, there's a customer calling right now. I'll let that one go to voicemail.
Speaking of.
But yeah, as far as getting work, that's another great way, in my opinion, to get work is to, you know, work as a subcontractor for larger firms or for people in unrelated industries. Like there was this person, I don't work with them so much anymore, but they're a property management company. And they have incidences where they need to, because I guess they have, you know, if you were renting their apartment, it would say free Wi-Fi. And so their Wi-Fi comes with the apartment. So it's their responsibility to keep it up and running. Or if someone's having trouble with it, sometimes it's their responsibility to have somebody, you know, take care of that instead of the residents or whatever. So you'll end up going out there and you know, have to meet with the resident in 5B and then look at their setup or whatever. And it gets billed to the property management company, but you just come out there representing them. You don't wear your company's logos or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
So I would get a call from him time to time and saying, hey, the place down here, whatever, needs that, or the router doesn't work. Everybody says they don't have Wi-Fi. So they'll just pay you to go out like they would pay a plumber. You know, if the toilets were backing up in the East Wing, then you go over there as a plumber and fix it, and they just pay you.
Gotcha. Okay. No, that makes sense. So
working for them while retirement homes, getting to be like the resident person, whatever, there, to where when you're... when any of the residents have issues that supersede some of the contracts that they have with the maintenance people that work there, like specifically if you're, I don't know, you pay to keep your parents in a retirement home or something. If there's any issues with the facilities there, that's totally on, obviously, the company who handles it. So sinks, toilets, whatever, electrical. But the internet thing and the computer thing is kind of outside of that. So if your mom, you know, has some issue where she's not getting her email done and she lives in this retirement home, it's like, what are you going to do? You call and talk to the people at the desk and they say, well, that's not really us. But we have a guy that will give her card and then you go down and handle that for them. So using other companies and businesses and services as a hub for offering your service, that I found to be pretty effective.
That's great. Yeah, that's really good.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I'm trying to think of other stuff that I've done that's worked out well, because there's a few things that I've tried that did not work out well. Like, I would not recommend, well, I don't know, whatever. Never mind what I would recommend. For me, the whole Facebook thing and I don't know what else, LinkedIn and all that, it just felt like I was in a room with a whole bunch of other salespeople that were just talking to hear their own pitch. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like everybody's selling something on there. So if you go to like Facebook for Business and you go look at all the business pages, everybody's posting all about their business, but I don't really see people interacting about, you know, like asking questions or interacting, engaging in any other way other than they were trying to sell what they were trying to sell. So you're not getting any bites. You're just putting stuff out there in a saturated, you know, it's like a ad fest. So I wasn't super into that. And I didn't find it effective either. I didn't get any business from going on Facebook and liking and sharing people's silly stuff.
Cat videos. No.
Yeah, I mean, or because I figure you go to they have those things where you can pay and go in, or you go free for a couple times, and maybe there's a plumber, and there's usually a real estate person, and there's usually like some kind of landscaping type people, and someone from every different industry is there, and they're supposed to be sharing referrals and, you know, helping to I don't know, maybe coach each other and to some extent say, hey, you know, this really worked for me, or this really worked for me, and share business and say, hey, I've just sold somebody a house and they need a roofer. So you're in my group, you're a roofer. Here's their information. Call them and try to sell them a new roof or something. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Like a BNI group.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Like that.
Okay.
It would be cool if that whole Facebook business, you know, ad area, whatever, was more like that, but it's not at all. In my experience, it wasn't at all.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on, it probably depends on your area and what you're trying to grab. Now, I would agree with you. I think for local business, I think it's still tough, because when I look at Facebook, and maybe I'm probably not the demographic, but I skim. And if it's anything close to resembling any type of ad or information or something like that, I usually skim right. I don't even see it. I'm so good at just blocking it out. So I would imagine a lot of other people are starting to be like that. And maybe there probably are people that I would say maybe nationally or globally might be able to use a platform like that and really get some good business from it. But really, your localized business is going to be more hands-on, I think, where you're face-to-face versus just getting on the internet, social media, and all this stuff. So,
yeah, I see it work great for restaurants and bars.
Okay. Okay.
But, other than, I mean, because people are checking in here, taking their picture at, you know, so if you've got it set up to where your business is constantly getting tagged in everybody's pictures, and I could see that maybe working out. But just in the BNI type groups that are on Facebook, I spent a good amount of time on there and really didn't feel like I was getting much out of it. So that would be something I did not think worked very well. Yelp was super expensive, in my opinion, for what you end up getting out of it, because it paid for itself, sure, you know, and I'm not saying that they're not good, because when you pay them, they will get you out there and they will get your phone ringing for sure.
Okay.
But it's pretty expensive. And like AdWords is way cheaper.
Okay.
And you get, and for me, I got at least as much business paying the Google than paying Yelp. And the other half of it was, and it didn't really happen to me, I didn't experience this so much, but in researching different things, it sounded like Yelp was super shady with a lot of people.
Okay.
So even though I didn't experience that much, you know, like them hiding your good reviews and doing weird things, if you read about it, you'll see.
Okay.
So there was that, which made me a little bit apprehensive about continuing to pay for it. But mostly I didn't feel like I was getting enough out of it.
Gotcha.
It was just way too expensive. I'm very frugal.
There's nothing wrong with that. Hey, that's how businesses are built. You know, sometimes you got to have that frugality in order to build your business. There's no point in going in and getting all this, all the things that you don't need right from the beginning, and just spending a whole lot of money, not getting that return on investment. It's just, it's not a great scenario to be in. And then next thing you know, you turn around and you're in hock for everything. I mean, that's how businesses go out of business a lot of times. So being frugal and doing it, I think consistency probably is the number one key. being consistent in doing, and it doesn't matter if it's the same thing, but being consistent in getting your name out there in some form or fashion, being consistent in doing a good work for somebody, being consistent in letting people know that they can share your name with others. You know, these types of things I think are go way farther than just any of these other routes that you're just advertising. If that makes sense.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I like about a business is if you can consistently get the same haircut, you know, that you want, or consistently have the items in stock that you need, or consistently, you know, have the same smiling person every time you go there that you enjoy. And people like that. They like habit, they like routine, and they like consistency. And if people call me, they're going to end up getting what I feel is good quality. They're going to end up getting a nice guy to come over and be nice. Which I would not mention, except that I get that comment constantly. They're like, oh, well, you're the most nice IT person that I've ever met, or you're the nicest technology person that I've ever met. Most of them are all jerks. And I'm like, wow, that's weird, because most of the people that I talk to in my industry are super nice. But that's,
oh no, we're all narcissistic, all about ourselves. Come on now.
Yeah, but then I think we're to a certain degree, like when you have other people that are like, oh, well, you're cool too, because, you know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are super nice in this industry, and maybe some of them get a little bit misunderstood. Because I find that when you interact with customers, especially general public, whatever, some people have really aggressive approaches, or really challenging or whatever, dominating approaches towards right. interacting with people that they don't know yet. You know, like if a salesperson, if you want to imagine a salesperson comes in, and or a real estate person is going to have a certain attitude that they've developed through professional life, you know, where they're going to be really open or genuinely inviting. But then there's other people, you know, like, I don't know, I'm going to make some people mad, but maybe like a personal trainer who's like super intense, like makes weird eye contact with you. And we have to deal with people from all different walks of life. So some people are going to approach us in a way that it's like, that's super uncomfortable. And maybe we come off a little bit like maybe we've just been challenged, and now we have to show how smart we are and use all these big computer words that you don't understand and show you what we know. And then we come off to that person like, wow, I was just trying to say hi, and he started making me feel like an idiot, because that's what people say about us, is that we try to make people feel like idiots.
Right.
I would disagree.
Yeah, I think there are, here's a problem. I think a lot of times we're talking to people that we hang around on a consistent basis. We're talking about people that either own their businesses, maybe are one person shops, or they are just doing things on their own, versus a lot of times, and this is a problem I have, once you get to a bigger size company and you start throwing all these employees out to taking care of your customers, and quite honestly, we're not always paying them a decent wage. We're just not. And you can look at it across the industry. So in that respect, a lot of times you are going to get people that are just sick and tired of doing the same things day in and day out. They don't own it. So they're going to have this type of attitude. And I feel that that's probably a lot of times what these people are getting. They're not getting the business owner who comes out and wants to have a nice conversation with them. They're just getting an employee that says, hey, I pay my bills. I have no passion for this. It's all gone. I don't care anymore.
That's a great point. That's a really good point. Because I think a lot of us that do this for ourselves at one point in time, maybe we were that gal or guy, you know, who knows that we're doing all the work and someone else is getting all the money, and I'm going to walk away with this, you know, maybe I'll get 10% of what you're paying. Maybe right. That's how much I'll get to keep, the guy who's doing all the work or the girl who's doing all the work. And some shareholder is going to end up with, and that's one of the reasons I started this for myself, is because that is a poopy feeling,
right?
You know, it does not feel good. I mean, you learn some things after you go into it for yourself, that all the stuff that company used to do to get that customer in the first place, or to back the work that you're doing, in case you make a mistake, and all, I mean, that's all taken care of by somebody else. And maybe that's a little bit more apparent now that I do it for myself, than it was at the time. But still, I would way rather get to keep all the money get to set the price for what I think is fair for me and the customer, and get to deliver the type of work that I felt. Because at the same time, you would go out for those bigger companies, and even if they are, I don't want to say, if they are positive outlook kind of person, they're not trying to, you know, be that Gallagher guy, they're still limited on what they can even do for you, the tools that they can use. I mean, that was really frustrating for me when I worked for other companies as well.
Right.
Like, you're not allowed to use whatever software you can use. You can use the software we have licenses for. And actually, not even can you. You have to use this. Even if you think it's a garbage tool and it just messes things up, this is what you have to use. It's part of our process.
Right.
And so you'll run CombiFix because it's part of their process, because it was super old there when they wrote that process. Seriously, the one place I worked for, that was on their queue. Like, when I started working for them, they were like, yeah, this is, and then you run this and then you run that. And I'm like, okay.
Wow.
Whatever you say, boss. Well, you know, and then they would end up with all these issues. It would reboot, and then like things would be totally wrong. Maybe it wouldn't even reboot at all, or a bunch of stuff was gone.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, and I've explained this over the years, but a lot of people, I tell them, you know, number one, even if you're paying a decent wage, the most you can expect out of an employee is about 70%. If you're getting more than that, you've got a godsend, because that just does not happen. People wear out, period. And when you're working for somebody else, you're only going to do what you have to do to get through the day most of the time. There are a few individuals out there that will go above and beyond, but I think that's the biggest complaint out there is, you know, we wonder why we have people that have bad attitudes, because we go out and we go, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Customer, I'm just here to fix a problem. I don't really care how your day is. I don't care nothing about you. I just, where's your computer?
Yeah, I've been a manager before of people, and I feel, because I get that. I totally get that. But my argument to that person would be like, I don't, and I tell employees this flat out sometimes when you're being more candid, is I don't expect you to care. You know, it would actually bother me a little bit if you did. If you went home and you thought about this place and you couldn't forget about whatever it is that you did for me for 8 hours today, if you couldn't get that out of your head, that would bother me a little bit. I think that you'd be a little bit messed up if that was the case, if you really cared that much. I mean, because this is just some company, you don't owe them anything. You know, you work, you get a paycheck, whatever. I get
right.
that. But while you're here, I need you to act as if you care. That's, I'm paying
right.
you to act as if you really, really care. If you actually did care as much as I want you to act like you do, that would be a problem. So I just want you to act like you care that much.
That's a good
Pretend.
Point.
Pretend. Just say whatever a person would say to a customer if they really, really cared. And do all the things that a person would do for a customer if they really, really, really cared as much as, you know, you should not in real life.
Right. That's a very valid point.
It's just what's expected. It's a behavior. It's what you say. It's
right.
what you do in front of the customers. And I mean, maybe none of my customers will listen to this, but there's some of them, to be honest, that I don't even really like that much. But that's a personal thing. It's got nothing to do with business. It's like the way that they, I don't know, conduct themselves and the words that they use and the things, the content of the things that they say. I'm like, wow, this is a person that I would never be friends with. You know, like I could not be in the same room with this person if I didn't have this trap on my lips right now, because I would say how offended I am by all the things that they're doing right now. And we would end up getting in some kind of argument, and then we just wouldn't be friends anymore. And that's how it would go. But I'm not here in a personal capacity. I'm here in a professional capacity. You know, I just here to say and do all the things that a person would do if they really liked you a lot and really cared so much about making your life and technology easier. So I'll do that, and that'll work out just fine.
All right. So what types of things have you been working on in your business as far as the repair side? Are you seeing, there's always trends in this business, like hard drives are failing or malware is becoming rampant, ransomware, all these different things that are coming up. Are you seeing a trend during this period of time?
I don't know. From a repair standpoint, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about. And the trend it feels like lately is that everyone's calling because they can't get their Wi-Fi printer to work on Wi-Fi.
Oh.
That's what I feel like. But then I go down there and all I do is, you know, try to delete whatever it is that they did, like whatever
right.
driver they installed. and you just install the wireless driver and follow all the prompts and then do it. And it's not like they have anything weird, like, I don't know, some domain controller that's not letting people, you know, sign on to the printer or share it for some reason, or they're sharing it through this computer and this, not even anything weird. It's just, you just install the driver and that's it. And then it works. It's not, you know, but this lady who works for this, actually it was the family that I was telling you about, that was a referral from the friend, whatever, the neighbor. And you go over there and it's super nice pad. And there's this nice lady who comes over and does like admin work for them, their business or something like that in the home. And she's got these two. And she told me that she was on the phone with the printer manufacturer for like 3 hours. And she'd been trying for like 2 or 3 days to do it. And she had people logging into the computers to try to set it up. So I'm thinking, okay, this has got to be some weird thing that I'm going to learn out of this process. I'm going to troubleshoot it. I'm going to find out what it is. And it's going to be some cool, like weird thing that I had to do. And it wasn't. It was like really disappointing how super easy it was. Because you try the basic stuff first, and then people are like, well, what was wrong? And I'm like, I don't know how to tell you this, but I don't know what you did wrong. Because all I did was just delete all the stuff that you did and redo it the way you're supposed to, and now it works fine. Obviously, I don't put it to them like that, but
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I wish it was something wrong. More complicated. I don't know what you could have possibly done wrong. And I don't know what all these people were doing on the phone and logging into your computer. And I don't know what all this stuff was that you were doing, but maybe it's, just start over and do it right the first time. I don't know.
It's, you know, there's something to be said about going back to the basics and just following the process. The steps, again, from our standpoint, when you either download the driver for a printer from the website or even use the disc if you need to. And I know most printers are still coming with discs. You throw that puppy in there and you let it run. A lot of times when I am setting up wireless printers, I will make sure that I plug them into a desktop or a laptop or something like that. Run that stuff from there. And then after I get it set up on a Wi-Fi, a lot of times I'll unplug it. And I seem to have pretty good success with that. But there's just these little things we've learned over time that make our jobs easier that the normal person doesn't really know how to do it, even though it seems simple to us.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I joke, it keeps food on the table and,
right,
you know, it keeps a roof over my head. So I'm really thankful for it because, yeah, if it wasn't the case, if everyone knew how to do everything, I mean, I could go through this stack of cards of customers on my desk right here and just tell you like story after story of something that they did that I don't know how it's possible that I got paid to do that, but I did. And it was super easy. And that's awesome because not everybody gets to do things that are easy. Not even I get to do things that are easy every day. Sometimes it is hard.
Sure.
A lot of the times I'm sweating in an attic or some weird crawl space and there's spiders, which I really don't enjoy having around me, and fiberglass all up on your arms. And that's not cool either. So sometimes it's hard.
Sure.
Than others. But yeah, sometimes it's super easy. And like the trends lately for me and what is computers, I've got a couple down here with bad power supplies, which I'm waiting on. Like those two came in at the same time from two different people, both the same issue. What else? There's a...
Now, are those OEMs like Dells or HPs or something?
One of them's an HP and the other one's an Acer.
Okay.
Now, and they're go ahead, sorry.
Are they proprietary power supplies that you have to get that are like a certain size? Because some of them are like slimline and...
Yeah, exactly. The HP here and the Acer actually as well. They're both the smaller ones.
Okay.
I forget off the top. I think it's like a 240 or something. I can't see it from here, but yeah, I just went on to order those from the manufacturers, got the part numbers and did it that way, not from them directly.
It'd be nice if we could actually use just generic power supplies, Corsair or whatever, to be able to put these units, but they don't sell anything that's proprietary. So
well, and I had a smaller one in the other room that when one of these came in, I was thinking, oh, maybe I can use that, but the pins to the motherboard aren't the right size and it doesn't have the same number of, and then there's the couple little headers that go over to what ends up becoming the buttons on the front panel of this one.
Okay.
And I didn't see those on there either. So yeah, it is what it is. But like you said, they make it that way. So we got to get their part numbers and whatever.
Yep. Well, I think a lot of times if you had a regular size, desktop, then obviously it would be a case would hold a regular power supply, and they're probably using regular 500 watt or whatever. But with the slimline ones, there's not really a whole lot they can do because they're trying to use these smaller form factors to get all the parts in there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it used to make sense for me, and I'm sure it still does for a lot of people to keep tons of, you know, different parts on hand, even if it's like one that you don't use that often. Maybe you just might sell one of them a year, or you keep it around anyway, like some weird Mac part or something. But I haven't been doing that too much lately. I found just getting a part within, you know, a few days or so has been easy enough. And then I don't end up on the, I'll end up having it ordered through the customer's payment information, basically helping them order it. And then I just charge a fee to get them, help them, you know, pick out parts and order everything, but they pay for it directly. So they've got the receipt. It's their interaction with that company. I'm not charging any markup on the part. I just charge a service fee where I'm just charging labor basically to broker the deal, so to speak, or whatever. Right. But researching it, finding all the part numbers that you need, finding a reputable seller and getting that all set up. But if they have a problem with the part, that's between you and whoever we bought it from. You've got all the paperwork. There's your order number. You're good to go with them. So I don't have to deal with that as much lately. And for that reason, I don't use, I mean, sometimes I'll still sell people hard drives that I keep hard drives on hand because you end up using those a lot. But that's the only thing I end up having to pay taxes for that on.
Okay. No, that makes sense.
Everybody else pays their sales taxes directly.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of things out there. Yeah, I don't think you need to keep a whole lot of stuff on hand. In talking about priorities and having stuff on hand for people, and there are people that still nowadays, this is just me, this is my opinion, but everything, even to businesses, seems like it's an emergency. And the reality is, with the proper setup and backup solutions, backup computers, whatever, you really shouldn't have anything that's, oh my gosh, an emergency. You know, if a computer fries out, you should be able to, hey, that's great, we'll get one here in a couple of days, no big deal. You know, obviously everybody wants it yesterday, but the reality is, do they need it? Probably not. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you guys have micro centers where you're at?
Yes, I do. I've got one. It's like 45 minutes away.
Yeah, that's the thing. So there's one, if you hit it in really bad traffic, it might take you a couple hours or whatever to get up there and a couple hours to get back if you leave at horrible times. Otherwise, it takes about an hour or so from here to get up there and back, or, you know, another hour to get back. And if it's that important, then why don't you just send one of your people up there to go buy it? Whatever. I'm not going to do it unless you want to pay me my hourly for drive time, in which case, fine. I'll go sit in LA traffic at my hourly rate. No big deal. I have a Prius, so we're cool. But yeah, otherwise you send your person up there to go buy it. We're not that far away. Like, we live near two major cities, San Diego and Los Angeles. So if some of these customers, I mean, it's super important to them. And like the property management people, I could understand because they've got, you know, a whole bunch of people breathing down their neck and it's important to them. But when it comes back to me, like I've said before, I let all my customers know this, like, I am not the person that's going to drop everything in my life and send somebody right out there. And you're not going to call back and talk to a manager. You're just, it's me. That's it. And that's why, you know, you cannot expect ever immediate service. And if you ever do call with it, either I can do it or I can't, you know, and it's not a matter of, oh, well, I'll give you more money. And then, but no, it's just, if I'm doing something else, I'm doing something else. You know, if I'm at the kiddos' choir recital, I'm not even going to pick up my phone, you know?
Right.
So that is what it is. So those big emergency, where it actually really is an emergency, I'm usually going to probably steer them towards one of my, whatever you want to call them, affiliates, the people that I do work for, but they're bigger, way bigger than me. And so it's like, hey, go pay them because they're like five times as much as me. So that's the difference. You
exactly.
Know? You pay them for, you know, a service agreement that includes 24-hour whatever, 48-hour resolve, whatever it is, but that's what you're paying for. I'm just going to charge you a real fair hourly rate. I basically see myself like a plumber, except I do technology stuff.
And I think you set the expectation up early on. So you let them know ahead of time that
oh, yeah.
you let them know basically when you're available, how you're going to be available, and what they are going to expect down the road if an emergency or something should arise. And I think as long as we're upfront and honest, I think a lot of times we catch ourselves in trouble when we try to come in as a smaller business and we go, hey, we can do everything and we'll throw in, you know, some buttered bread too. It's like, okay. But the reality is we can't do all the things that we say we're going to do, especially when you're one person. So you have to build that into your business model.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're just one person and you're promising more than one person that you'll do whatever they want, whenever they want, what are you going to do when you're already fulfilling a promise for one customer when another customer calls you and says, I need you at my place now? Well, you know, I'm in San Diego, you're in Long Beach, like I can't be there at the same time. Well, you promised.
Right.
That's silly. Unless you want to go hire a bunch of people, and that's fine if that is the level. I mean, because these firms that I'm talking about, they have a bunch of people like me that work for them. And if I'm not available, they'll go to the next gal or guy on their list and just call them and have them come out.
Right.
Because they have a whole list of people that work for them as, you know, subcontractors or whatever. So, yeah, that's what they're there for. But if you're a one person operation, I don't know how you could possibly promise people all that. And to your point earlier is that most of the people that I work for, all of them really that I can think of for the most part off the top of my head, I don't know what kind of emergency situation would come up. You know, there's nothing you have backups for everything. You have, for the most part, a wired network at a lot of these places. And anyone who is wireless, I don't know, turn it off, turn it back on. Like, if that doesn't work, I'll be out tomorrow morning.
Right. Take two aspirin and I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah. Or if it's that much of an emergency, call the Geek Squad. See how that works for you. Give them a ring. No, I shouldn't talk smack because whatever.
No, it's all good. I just think, yeah, as long as you, and it's not so much that people are, I don't know that people are promising things to their customers, but I think there's an omission where they don't let them know up front. And I think that's where I applaud you on actually talking to the customer and giving that them that expectation, where if nothing was said, then the customer is going to think whatever they want to think. Oh, you're available all the time. I can just call you on a whim and you're going to be here. And they have that false expectation because we didn't set it up in the beginning and tell them exactly what to expect from our business relationship.
Yeah. Well, I like to see my customers like people, and I like them to see me as people, not a function, you know?
Right.
And so when people think of you as a function, then they have a need. Your function fulfills it. I need you to, you know, I don't know, whatever. My screensaver's stuck. I can't change it. You come fix it. It's like, sorry. Or not sorry, really, whatever. But when you're a person, I'm like, hey, you know, it's around 4 o'clock. I pick up the kiddo from school every day, so I can't be there, and, you know, for at least a couple more hours or whatever. Oh, okay, cool. Well, have fun with your kiddo, whatever. And you're a person who has things in life that they do that aren't just their function. You know, you
right.
wouldn't, I don't know, whatever, ask the McDonald's person when they're off to make you a hamburger just because you want a hamburger right now.
So, Aaron, what other types of things in your business are you seeing? Are you seeing failing hard drives or anything like that common right now, or besides the printers?
No, I mean it's such like a mixed bag. I mean, like, these two power supplies came in at the same time, I guess, so that's kind of common. I see failing hard drives all the time.
Okay,
I don't know if that's really a trend that. I mean, it goes in ebbs and flows. I feel like sometimes I'm here at the home office working on a lot of machines because I have a lot of physical machines here. And then sometimes I feel like no one's calling with their computers getting fixed, and I'm doing a lot more on location work. Sometimes I have some clients that live in other places in the country. So sometimes I feel like I'm doing a lot of remote work. I've been putting people more on like retainers and different service agreements like that, where, you know, either certain objectives every month or a certain amount of time every month, so I can know that money's there, or I'll collect it on an annual, and then I know for this many more months I'm doing this for so-and-so, and then we'll, you know, revisit it, whatever, in February or whatever it might happen to be with their contract. So I know for some people what I'm doing for certain times of the month or for a certain amount of time or whatever. So I'll schedule that out appropriately. So I'll try to do a lot of the remote stuff overnight in the same period of time if I can, and just hook up a few different machines and run all that as simultaneously as possible. Some on-site stuff I try to schedule to where there's a couple places down south from here that I work for, and I'll try to get them on the same day or within the same 2 or 3 days if it's multiple day projects that I have to do. So I try to balance it all as best as I can. To answer your question, I don't know. I don't think I really have like a one thing that I see over and over, other than people getting, I don't know what you want to call them, the potentially unwanted programs, like not real viruses or real bugs or anything. But when I go to do cleanups at a lot of these different places or do remote cleanups, it's almost always, I don't see anything gnarly, you know, no crypto wall, no ransomware, nothing crazy, just little tiny things that aren't really that significant. They might not even notice. It may not even be slowing them down at all.
Okay.
So a trend of not seeing trends with infections lately. well, we run a monitor, and yeah, I enjoy it, except it used to be for a while that like that was just sweet bread and butter. You know, people were getting either whatever movie streaming or music downloading or porn surfing or something. And they were coming in, it's like $200 all day. And that was pretty awesome if that was happening now, because they're really easy to do, and you can right. do a lot of it remotely. So that would be sweet to have those coming in constantly. But no, it hasn't really happened.
Now, are you using a particular antivirus, or do you actually even sell antivirus?
I do not sell anything. And even when I worked for other places, I would make it, because like I said, I'm people, you're people, let's deal with each other like people. And I know that the company I work for wants me to sell you this and tell you that this is the best, but I'm not going to tell you that, because next time when you come in, this thing failed, like all of them fail.
Right.
None of them are bulletproof. And that was my sales pitch, is it doesn't matter what you buy, you will not be safe. I'm the guy who's telling you that. So next time when you come back and you've got some problem, you're not telling me, well, you told me to buy ESET. You said I'd be fine. And then, you know, a month before that, when something else was the flavor of the week, you told me to buy Trend Micro because you said that would be fine. or whatever it is that I happen to get the bigger kickback on or whatever. So no, I don't do any of that. I tell people flat out, you can buy whatever. I mean, I have that being said, ESET actually is pretty good, you know, so you can buy that. There's a couple, and I tell them also, year to year, things are different. You know, maybe Toyota made a great car in 88 and maybe they made a crappy car in 92. Well, I mean, it is what it is. Things change. So there was a point in time where maybe even Norton might have been the best. I mean, might have been the best out there, but for years, there's no way that I would recommend it. Consistently for a long time, I would definitely not recommend them, in my opinion. So no, I don't sell anything in particular. As far as using things, I still use the Repair Tech Solutions software. I really like that one just because it's so compact and easy, and generally pretty good. You know, and on there they've got some of the tools that I would have used anyway, like the Kaspersky TDS, and Herd Protect is on there, which I like well enough. They have Hijack This on there. I mean, a bunch of the ones that people already use anyway, they just got it nice and compact and convenient. And I like the branding on there where it'll show your company's logo instead of this, that, and whatever. So people are usually, especially in the remote sessions, they're like, oh, that's neat.
Right.
Because they don't know what you're doing. They just see your software popping up and a whole bunch of things clicking through the screen and stuff looks like it's happening because it's happening in the background, but I don't have to do any of it, which is pretty sweet. So I would definitely endorse their product for sure. Other than that, what else? I don't know. In the whole spirit of trying to tutor whatever, I'll usually end up leaving, putting like, because I don't actually use Malwarebytes in my process, but I end up leaving it on their computer and saying, hey, run this. And if it doesn't work, you know, if it doesn't pop up and say that it found some really gnarly stuff, then you can call me if it doesn't. But a lot of the times, like I said, these little things that people are ending up with, you know, it's nice to be able to show them just kind of whatever, make it seem like you're really working hard for your money. But it's like, look, I found 298, you know, objects, but they're 298 things and they're all from the same thing. It's really only one thing. It's just 298 incidences of it, you know, doing something it wasn't supposed to. And that was something I got frustrated with in this industry, is the scare tactics and all that, making things seem so much worse than they really are. I mean, in some incidences I can see where, you know, you could have a real problem, but most people with their home computer, really, if they ended up having to wipe the thing and start over, wouldn't be that much of a loss. So scaring people into like a $400 a year contract over some potentially unwanted programs that they have, I would also refuse to do that when I worked for other companies, so I don't do it now.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers
question. It does answer the question. I was just thinking about the antivirus, because we're probably going to have this on the live show here. Probably by the time this airs, we'll probably have already talked about it. But one of the things is the antivirus, and it reminds me of the new Sprint commercials with the "Can you hear me now" guy, and I can't remember his name. But you know, his thing's like, he's like, yeah, they're all within 1% of each other. It doesn't really matter, except that Sprint's going to save you 50% off the bill that you're paying with most of these other carriers, right? So that's their spiel. And I would have to say, for the most part, that is true. And now, while it's all dependent on the area of the country you're in, I feel the same way with antivirus. I feel the same way with hard drives. The only difference is, like, when it comes to hard drives, that a lot of people don't realize is, I do actually believe they're all about the same, except I buy the higher end ones that seem to last a little bit longer. So by doing that, I have less callbacks on stuff like that versus getting the cheaper ones. But a hard drive is a hard drive. Antivirus is antivirus. And I know people will say, oh, but you got to read the reports, and this is at 95%, and this is at 92%, and this is at 98%. And all I say to that is, boogeyman, whatever. That's great. If you want to believe in those things and think that is the end all to be all, there's what we call something you can look at in a report. And then we have what's called real world. And so I tend to live in the real world. Like, I could bench my computer and say, oh, this is the fat. I'm in the top 20% of all video cards using 3D Mark or whatever. And which is true for me, but who cares? But here's the thing. I can play all my games at the highest resolution on a 30-inch monitor at 2K, and it works smooth and perfectly fine. So I don't care if I benchmark in the top 20%. Who cares? It doesn't matter. What matters is, in real world, it actually works for the things that I use it for. So
I'm with you, but I think, like you, I'm a person that has to work for my money, right? And so, like, the value of a dollar might mean something different to different people. And this is something I had to learn. I'll tell you how I learned it after. Well, I'll tell you how I learned it now. I went out to go do this job, and I was thinking maybe a little bit more price conscious. Like, more like I actually think in real life, because I have to work for my money, and ended up ordering some equipment, took the liberty of, you know, deciding, because they just said, oh, just get what we need. So I got what they needed, you know, and it worked just fine. And then later on afterwards, one of their people was like, hey, does it have power over Ethernet? And I'm like, no, because you're not really using that. That I, well, what if we want to? And like, they actually would have preferred to go, you know, a little bit higher in the spending. And since then, I've actually seen that with a lot of clients. Is one that I'm going out to take care of tomorrow. They wanted some networking equipment. So I just, you know, what would you recommend? I'd probably get something more or less like this, because I've been out to their place. I know what they have and what they don't have. And he's like, well, is there anything higher end than that, you know, that would be better? And my answer was, like you're saying, you're in the real world, you're not going to perceive any significant increase in performance at all. Because you're not doing the type of things that, you know, would require those additional features. But they would just rather spend the money and get the overkill. And it reminded me of when I used to work in high audio or high end audio sales. You would be selling speakers that are, it's just stupid how much each of them cost. ridiculous. And you've worked in automotive, so you know that some vehicles will use certain parts and whatever. And all of a sudden, it's like the bee's knees.
I've got a Sony stereo system in my vehicle right now.
Yeah, so there you go.
Who cares?
Well, but that's the thing. Some people really, really, really care. And I'll tell you a joke story real quick, just because I think they're full of garbage, and this is proof in at least one case. But people would buy these, you know, Sonos Faber amps or Primera amps and Sonos Faber speakers and just these super high-end things and spend tens of thousands of dollars on basically, you know, some speakers and an amp and like a DVD player or whatever at the time, just silly stuff. And they would have you, when they're auditioning the speakers, you're switching on this machine that would, you know, go back and forth between the different speakers, and you can set up a configuration to where, oh, this is this amp playing with this disc player playing with these speakers, whatever. And we're using all these kinds of cables or what to preserve the quality. And they'll have you switch between, okay, now try the other model. And you would hit a button and they would switch over to the other model. Well, I would hit a button that would basically do nothing. And then when it switched over to quote unquote the other model, they're like, oh yeah, I can really hear the difference in the mids right now. And I'm like, you don't hear any difference. And like, I don't tell them that. I'll just take their $80,000 and go install a stupid setup at their house. But that's an example of a person who, it's like when you buy wine, if it's a really expensive bottle of wine with a really fancy label on it, you're going to drink it and you're going to really, your brain will tell you that it is better than whatever other wine anyone else bought. You know, I don't know, whatever, the one they bring out in the craft, the house wine, which just comes out of a box in the back room. I'm not saying that there is no difference, because there is a difference, but it's how much it matters to one person or another. And to some people, getting the most expensive thing or getting what is perceived to be the top of the line, and I always tell people top of the line will not be top of the line next year.
Exactly.
You wait 2 or 3 years and your top of the line has technically specs that are lower than like one of the more entry-level products out there, but it's got its benefits. It's just how much is it worth to you or to me or to Joe or Jane? You know, it's different for everybody, and what's good for me is not good for other people necessarily. I just let people do whatever they want. I'll give them my advice, but then people, I've found, maybe it's just the area that I'm in, but they tend to want to get more than what they need. Even if they don't understand it, and even if it makes it, you know, they can't tell the difference. I know they can't, you know, because you hit the button and it doesn't make a difference because you heard the same one twice. But you think that it does for some reason, and that's really powerful. You know, I don't take advantage of it or anything, but
hey, people want what they want, you know, and it's exactly. That's a perfect example. I remember this going back a long time ago, back during the cassette tapes. Yes, kids, I said cassette tapes. That was the little thing that you could actually, when you had a tape that went in between two reels and you actually plugged it in to a cassette player. And I had a Sony Walkman at the time, and it would play, they would move the tape from one side to the other. And then you had to take the tape out and flip it over to play side B. And, you know, if it ever got, you know, caught in the head or whatever, you'd have to pull it out and you have to take a pencil and wind it up by hand. It was awesome.
Yeah.
If it would ever break, though, you could use cellophane tape and actually, you know, mash it together to make it work. And therefore, you lose a little bit of the song. No big deal.
Yeah, just like a half a second.
But I remember paying $50 for a Sony Walkman back in the day. And the Sony Walkman, I was in the military, and it was so beat up that the plastic tabs on the cover had broken. And I had to use a rubber band, like a mailing rubber band, to keep the door shut. So it would play my tapes. No big deal. So probably a little bit down the road, I still had this thing, but I saw in the PX, and I can't even remember the name brand, but it was $160 Walkman. Now this was back in the late 80s, just to let you know. And I'm like going, oh, that thing's cool. Man, this thing, it's got a little remote on it. It's got all these little buttons that does things. And I don't have to pull the tape out to flip it over. This is awesome. It has two sets of heads. It automatically flips over and plays the tape on both sides. I don't have to do nothing. It's awesome. I bought this thing, and I kid you not, no more than 3 months later, this high-tech piece of equipment died on me. Didn't work. There's no warranty. It doesn't matter 3 months. Back then, there was no warranty. It died. It died. It stopped working. But guess what was still working after a few years was my Sony Walkman.
Yep.
A lot of times you're not getting what you pay for. Sometimes you are.
That's for sure.
You know, sometimes there are things that if you're paying something for, you know, getting a better warranty on something, maybe quicker turnaround service, if something does happen, those things are important to me. I tend to buy higher end monitors just because I get 3 years of warranty on them, where if something happens, they basically will ship me another monitor or send a technician out to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, for what I use it for, it's worth it to me to pay a little bit extra. A lot of people, they're like, nah, give me the cheapest thing. When it dies, I'll buy another one, or, you know, or I won't. I'll just live off of this old monitor I got in the basement. But it all depends. So sometimes there are times that it is worth doing, and sometimes there are times that it's just not.
Well, it's just relative to the individual. Right. You know, I mean, what's important to you is going to be maybe not so important to other people. Some people are super into cars. I like backpacking, and I'll spend a ridiculous amount of money on a sleeping bag that I might use maybe a week out of the year.
Okay.
Like, but it's important to me because I enjoy that. It means a lot to me. I would spend more money on a camera than maybe somebody else who just, I'll just use my phone.
Right.
I'm like, oh, but the cameras, you know, they're way better. Well, the iPhone's pretty good.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I guess the iPhone is pretty good, but it's not all overkill and make me feel cool, you know?
Right.
And some people are just into stuff like that. And when I got into cameras, it was the old, you had to develop the film yourself, and they had the dark room at school, and, you know, you'd learned how to do the whole thing. And I'm still into that feeling, you know, and the big lenses and the whole mechanical aspect of it. I know it goes on an image sensor now, and you're not moving film through it anymore, but I still feel like I like that. Some people like record players a lot and like old vinyl, and they'll spend a crazy amount of money on vintage vinyl and, you know, old turntables or newer, but made robust like the old turntables. They'll spend thousands of dollars on turntables because it's what they like. It gives them that feeling of, you know, it's valuable to them.
You know, what's funny is basically we probably should name this the name of the show. Two old guys talk about old tech.
Yeah,
we've kind of dated ourselves a little bit, man. You're talking about processing film in a dark room. Most people are going to go, what's a dark room? I don't even know. And I'm talking about cassette tapes, and people are like, what's a cassette tape?
Well, it's like, you know, filters. You got all these filters now. Yeah, we used to have to like create the effect of filters in a dark room. I'm not even going to try to explain it. But yeah, no, that'd be a good title.
Oh, man.
Two steps before senile.
Aaron, again, I've really enjoyed just chatting with you. I enjoy talking and sharing these stories and figuring out, you know, what you're doing in your business, how things are changing. I'm waiting for you to come on the other show again, you know, sometime down the road, but, yeah, let me know when you're available for that. But I really enjoy just the one-on-one, and that's why I enjoy doing this show. And that's why we do this show, so that I can talk to other techs and find out what they're doing in their business, because everybody's got a different take and everybody's got different experiences that I think can help others out there. So I definitely appreciate you coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, always good to catch up with you. So thank you for having me around.
Now, where could people find you at if they wanted some more information or maybe ask you a question or something like that?
Oh, probably the as always, just go to my website, www.techytutors.com. And I think it's in the top right corner. Anywhere, somewhere on the screen is all the links to all my different LinkedIns and Twitters and Facebooks and all that. So you can click on whichever one you like to use, and it'll end up going to my phone, and I'll end up ignoring it for a couple of times. No, I'm just kidding. I'll hit it. I actually, when people reach out to me from this PodNuts platform, I definitely am likely to respond pretty quickly, because I'm like, oh, okay, this person's cool. Because when you have like a business address, and you end up getting so much random stuff from so many random places,
right?
Most everyone's trying to sell you something, but if it comes from PodNuts, they're probably not trying to sell me something. So.
Very good.
Mention that in your subject line. I'll make sure to open your email.
Oh, awesome. Well, again, appreciate it. And thanks for sharing today.
My pleasure.
You guys can find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you'd like to be a guest on the show like Aaron was, email me, guest@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. And you too can help support the entire Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, it doesn't change anything for you as far as price. It puts a little change in the Podnuts pockets to bring you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.